Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 872.
Is it okay if I talk now?
I mean, I guess.
Hey, everybody. It's Will Wheaton.
And
Avril Richardson, Chris's less rude friend.
We're recording something else, and then I was doing this intro, so I just asked them to sit in. But very first, this episode brought to you by Squarespace. Whether you need a portfolio to showcase your work on the internet, or if you want to make a store to sell products and services, or a blog to share your ideas. Well, you've written a weblog before.
Yes.
Since what year?
2000.
Since the year 2000.
Oh my God.
This was 17 years ago. There are people listening to this who were just born.
I know. And they're like, I'm sorry, who are you?
Yeah, no. They're like, hey, it's Will Wheaton from the weblog.
Right.
The old weblog.
From
the old days. Squarespace gives you everything you need to make your next move a reality. There's beautifully designed templates. There's customizable features. You can make an entire website simply, intuitively, and just add and arrange your content with a click of a mouse. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com and enter the offer code WHATAPRIL? That's right, Nerdist, get 10% off your first purchase.
How did you not know it was Nerdist? I put in the offer code Nerdist on every website I go to, just in case.
This is why you come to rehearsal, April.
Yeah, performance anxiety there. I had no idea what to say.
Katie, there's a Nerdist community corkboard where Katie will announce things that are happening in the Nerdist community.
I do.
For fans, by fans.
Yes, the first one is Matthew Hott. Right. So my friends and I have started our own podcast to describe and show evidence in speech, language, and hearing disorders. They are attempting to describe it in a way that is easily understood by all, similar to what Bill Nye does for science. And they wanted to do it with hearing and speech. And May is Hearing and Speech Month as well. The podcast is called Speech Science, and you can find it on iTunes, Google Play, everywhere, or speechscience.org. And then also the Best Friends Super Adoption is coming to both L.A. and New York the first weekend of June.
Well, I don't understand. You hate animals.
I do. I hate animals so much. That's why I'm always promoting animals because I just hate them.
Animal I meet is like super into you. I'm like, we get it. You like Katie.
You like Katie. I know.
Already.
She gives you a lot of attention.
Jeez.
Take it down a notch.
There will be hundreds of dogs, cats, and even some bunnies for you to meet and hopefully adopt. Plus, there will be food trucks, photo booths, pet supply, boutiques, and way more. It's a lot of fun, and there's only one goal, to find homes for as many animals as possible. In New York, it's at the Metropolitan Pavilion on 18th and 6th, June 2nd through 4th. And in L.A., it's in Warner Park Ranch in Woodland Hills, June 3rd and 4th. Go to bestfriends.org to find out more info.
Yeah, so I saw something on Reddit, and then I kind of jumped down a rabbit hole. It was really more of a foxhole because it was about the silver fox being this super domesticated, like they just bred generation of foxes and then like only they weeded out the ones that connected with humans the most. And now there's like a domestic fox called the silver fox, and it's gorgeous. So I was just like,
that
you can have. Well, maybe not in California because there are laws.
It's so domesticated that it just sits on the couch and complains
the entire time.
Like how dinner isn't ready.
It lives in a tree and just spouts out Wes Anderson dialogue. But it's
that fox.
So I went to a page. I'm like, I wonder if you can, and you can totally just like people breed them, and you can just have them.
Do they live like with? Can they cohabitate with other species?
I believe they, you know, I shouldn't answer that because I don't know the answer to that. But I feel like in my gut, I feel like this is maybe something you're not supposed to do.
I don't think you're supposed to
are
do that. That's
cute
a wild
as fennec
animal.
Foxes?
Fennec foxes are pretty fucking cute. But fennec foxes, if you ever watch videos of fennec foxes,
yeah.
And it's just like people just watching them run around like Superman circling the earth to turn it the other way. Like they'll just run around in circles and go, like they're super, they're super loud and they tear shit up. You know why? Because they need to live in the wild.
I saw one at a zoo someplace and it was the cutest thing I've ever seen adorable in my life. I didn't know that they could turn the earth backwards though.
They can
really
turn the earth
impressive.
Backwards. Yeah. To save the woman they love.
I feel like maybe we should be mobilizing the Fennec Foxes of the world to maybe change time a little bit. I feel like that would be really good for us.
They had to save the world from Fox Luthor. I hate myself. This episode is Michael Fassbender and Danny McBride. Danny McBride, I already know, is hilarious because I know Danny and he's amazing. They're both, by the way, they're promoting Alien Covenant, which is a blast and you should go see it. And they're both fucking great in it.
I was going to come see that with you, but I had dinner with friends and my friends fucking canceled dinner. A half hour too late for me to get in the car and drive down to meet you for the screening of the movie.
You know, the lesson is don't have friends.
Don't have friends. Yeah. I know. Listen, this is what I've been saying
forever.
They'll
always let you down.
Ever.
Yeah. Always
friends
let
are the
you
worst.
Down. They're the worst.
You should
people
just be a lonely misanthrope.
Stay away from them. But,
it's a good movie?
It's great. And Danny is Danny's great in the movie, and Fassbender is amazing and everything. But Danny got here a little bit earlier than Fassbender, and he was like, yeah, Fassbender's really funny. And I met him once years ago, and he was really nice and really cool. And he goes, he's really nice, he's really cool, he's really funny. And Michael Fassbender is legit hilarious.
You know who I always confuse him with in my head? The Riverdance guy.
Michael Flatley?
I guess.
Not remotely the same. Well,
I know.
I mean, I guess they're
because you're
all,
racist
Irish.
Against Irish
yeah.
people.
So we all do the river dance, do we?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, first of all, I'm Irish, so I can't be racist against Irish people. We're a bunch of potato-eating mix. But also, I'm Scottish, so I can hate the Irish side of me.
That's why you –
and the one thing we agree on is how much we hate the English. I'm not hip with what the kids are into these days. So I just thought like, oh, it's the same guy. You know,
no, that's not.
I'm mostly racist against Michaels.
You mean the hobby shop?
Yeah.
You won't go to the craft store?
I'll never go to the craft store.
I don't.
No. Let me tell you about those people.
I make sure all my yarn is locally sourced.
Yeah.
all my buttons for plush owl toys are I make them myself.
I want my candle molds to be all locally grown by farmers.
So Michael Fassbender, amazing. Danny McBride, hilarious. Friday, May 19th is when Alien Covenant opens. This episode also brought to you by Casper, which is an amazing mattress company that makes obsessively engineered mattresses at a shockingly fair price, Will Wheaton. So there's supportive memory foam.
Wait, are you making a sideways comment about my bed that you've never been in?
Well,
the last one of my beds you were in was when you fucked the snake out of the cage.
This is getting deep.
And that was a very long time ago.
This is an intro? Because this needs to be an episode, whatever just
was
said.
That was nearly 30 years ago, sir.
If you want to hear the fuck the snake out of the cage story, you need to listen to the first time Will was on the Nerdist podcast from like 100 years ago.
All right,
I will. And that story, you will understand what that means. That actually does mean something.
It does.
All right.
And there's a real story behind it that was one of the most terrifying experiences of my life.
So would you say, like, that Casper mattresses fuck the snake out of the cage? How good they are?
I don't know if Casper would say that. I would say Casper the ghost is dead Richie Rich. I would say
yeah,
that.
Of course you would say that because it's true. It's all kinds of true.
Casper mattresses you can try for 100 nights risk-free in your own home. And if you don't love it, they will pick it up and refund you everything. They understand the importance of sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially since you spend like a third of your life on it. So with over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars out of 5, it is quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress. Get $50 toward any mattress by visiting casper.com/nerdist. Use the offer code what, April?
Nerdist.
Yay!
Hey, if you don't like it and they come to pick it up, do they have a dude that like sits with you and you can talk it out?
I mean,
like, I had 100 terrible nights.
Let me
see if I can ruin your sponsor.
If there's one thing
I
know,
is it true that they're full of bees?
It's one thing that I know about people who are delivering things is that they love to just take a break from their day and
they like to sit around and chat, right?
Time. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
I want to say this about Danny McBride, please, because he grew up not far from where I did in Georgia. And his sense of humor, one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life is during a season of Eastbound and Down where he was yelling and he does the best insults. Because when you grow up in the South, especially being poor is like the worst insult you could say to a kid. You know what I mean? Like
right.
You don't have cool stuff because you're poor.
Right.
And he yells at the guy and he goes, "Where'd you get those clothes, Gap baby?"
It's just like, the fuck is this wrong? And it's also, what's wrong with that? It's just
and it's Danny McBride,
thing.
Too.
Yes, yes.
I always confuse him with Danny Zucker.
Nope, different guys.
All the Dannys look the same to me.
No, I feel like you have a real name issue.
Listen, it's not me. It's my dad.
I'm not Chris Evans.
What?
I know I...
Well, I've always mistaken you for Chris Pratt.
But you have the same muscles.
But you have the... Well, I'm glad I tattooed the star on my chest. The red, white, and blue rings around it. What a great idea. Guys, I got to go do some reps. You know, a body like this does not lift itself.
You probably recover from all those reps in one of those fine Casper mattresses.
Full circle.
Wow, bringing it around.
See, how about that?
Really I'll post pictures of it on my Squarespace website.
Yay! Oh, look at what we did.
It, guys.
We did it. Yay. It's the end of the intro. Will Wheaton, Amber Richardson, me, Chris Hardwick. Katie, number 872, Michael Fassbender, Danny McBride, Rural Living.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you?
Yeah.
Hello.
How's it going?
How's it going?
Nice to see you, Michael. Chris.
Yeah.
It's never ended.
What time did you initiate it?
Thank you so much. Yeah, we really, really loved it.
Got to the hotel 10.
Excellent.
Oh, yeah.
After an In-N-Out pit stop.
All right, so are you done after today, or is there more to do?
Tomorrow, James Corden.
Oh, he's fun. That'll be easy.
Yeah. Are you doing the show, or are you singing in the car?
I'm doing the show.
Ah, excellent.
I wish I was singing in the car.
You should tell him that.
Yeah, I should.
I'll bet you he would let you do it if you wanted to.
It would be a bad idea. That's right. Never wanted to hear me sing.
Man in the Mirror.
See me, he could be Man in the Mirror. I've been practicing it.
But you need to do it in a mirror.
Not as good as Michael.
You need to do it in a mirror. You need to do it so you've just gotten out of the shower, the mirror's all steamy, you just need to wipe it down and look at yourself and just,
yeah. Gonna make a change.
You keep fogging up and you gotta keep, yeah, it's just sweating the entire time. That's fun, though. Corden's nice.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great.
You guys have a good time.
Yeah.
You have a, I'm sure there's a fun English-Irish rivalry that you can play with.
I don't really care.
Good.
But everybody's looking for funny stories, which I always seem to fail bringing out. They're like, so did anything funny happen? I was like, did anything funny happen when we were shooting? I can't remember.
You're like, well, I always remember them boring. After we're done with press. You're just like,
exactly.
Oh, I should have said that one story. That was actually kind of funny.
Yeah.
You should, or just don't tell them what it is.
Yeah, lie.
Gotta make sure. Yeah, lie. Why do I lie? Definitely.
Oh, it was hilarious. You should have seen.
Vigo did that on Letterman. It said that when we were doing... Dangerous Method. He was like, yeah, Michael's a really nice guy, but, you know, pretty intense. He's got this weird sort of preparation thing where he ties one leg up behind his back and hops on the other leg. And it's before we do a scene, so we're kind of waiting, and then he sort of releases the leg, and it's like, okay, good, we're ready to go. And next thing, he straps up the other leg and starts, you know, jumping. He's like, you know, he's like, one scene we had to do in a boat. But the delivery was totally deadpan.
Did you ever get asked about it?
Like, yeah.
You should have said, give me a second. You could
like, yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, we've all got our ways.
I don't know how you... I mean, when you're working, whatever you're works. Pretty focused on work. So I don't know, you know... Yeah.
The or idea, jumping.
Yeah, or jumping to get prepared for your work.
That's right.
But I never... But that idea of like, what's the funny thing that... I
feel like that really. Got started from like George Clooney movies. Like, they would talk about pranks he would do on set. And then I think everyone just assumes that everyone is pranking each other all day on sets now.
One time, George Clooney, Dutch oven, Julia Roberts...
That must happen on every
just
movie.
Just held her head under the sheets and farted 9 times. It was great. And then we shot.
Yeah. Mel Gibson, too. I think he's a bit of a prankster, isn't he?
Prankster, yeah. I'm never in the mindset for it, are you?
I am, but then, you know, I'm just too lazy.
Yeah, to pull it off. To put it all I got to say all these words.
I do certain pranks on April Fool's Day.
Mm-hmm.
I did one on this job, Murphy's Law, which is a TV show about this cop. Undercover cop in the UK, and I sort of got together with the main guys, James Nesbitt, and another one of the actors, Mark Womack. Yeah, it was Womack. sort of decide. I said, okay, you're going to, you know, pretend, you know, attack me. And, you know, Jimmy, you'll be the guy that sort of breaks us up. So we have the whole sort of thing going on. And it was great. We sort of bedded it in through the morning, you know. So I would be talking to Jimmy, and Jimmy's like, what did you say to him? And you can see, like, grips and stuff going by, pretending that they're not listening in, but, you know, just an earshot. And we built it up for, like, an hour and a half. And then he would have a conversation with Mark, and Mark was like, just tell him to stay fucking away from me, yeah? And so this was building up, and then we're in the kitchen. I said, okay, it's on now. And I was like, boom, threw myself up against the fridge, and I was like, oh, my God, I think you broke my nose. And Jim's like, Jesus Christ, no, Mark. The director came in, his face was fucking gray. It was green. He was like, Jesus Christ. And I was like, my nose, I think it's broken. Of course, all the producers had the cans on, you know, so they were out by the tent going, what the hell's going on?
You should have done that on this movie. That would have worked.
Yeah, I did another one on my parents, which was pretty mean, actually.
Yeah.
I told them I was arrested and they had to come and bail me out. $10,000.
That's extortion. That's not even a prank.
Yeah. And production, you know, I didn't want production to find out. I had to get to set.
The funny thing, but you have to be careful with
anyway,
stuff like
I'm
that.
I'm telling that story on James Corden tomorrow.
Shit.
I'm telling
you on this
one. But if you...
That's my funny story.
You got to save him.
You have to be careful, though, because if... Nowadays, if that gets out, then it's like, then you just have to put out fires because all the press is like, oh, Michael Fassbender got in a fight.
No, I should have followed it through and let it go all the way to TMZ. You know, I pulled the plug in it too early. That was a problem.
Yeah, you should have let it spitball and get
bigger.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Then it's a real April Fool.
But the tabloids, they don't, I mean, I feel like people who get covered a lot by tabloids are the ones
They don't stick to the facts anyway, so
it doesn't really matter. Well, listen, we're in an age where that doesn't fucking matter anymore.
Sure, it's like there's tabloids.
No, doesn't have to be anything. It's like, oh, I saw a thing on the internet. That must be the truth because that's what I already want to believe. Great. Yeah. Fucking who cares about anything anymore? Yeah, you know what? Just make up stories about the movie. Who gives a shit?
That's
it's not gonna
absolutely.
Yeah.
It's that's absolutely not gonna. It's not gonna matter.
Yeah.
But it's so hard to the talk show circuit is tough because it's just like you have 7 minutes. Like, how do you like immediately come out and be engaging in 7 minutes when you have to pretend like you're just having a brand new conversation?
And all it does is it takes you just stumbling over the end to a story. And
oh,
then you're, you fuck the whole thing. It's all done. Yeah. You're like, oh, it's gone. I ruined it. Yeah. I don't have time to tell it now.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the pre-setup. You know, so, do you like playing football? Well, there was this one time when I was playing football.
Funny you ask.
No, next question. Just pull the Charles Grodin.
And they just look at you. This isn't what we went over.
Yeah. We went over this.
Maybe that's what you should do. Maybe you should fake a fight with Corden instead of, like, he just says something that kind of rubs you the wrong way, and then you guys just end up...
Hit him over the head with
Who else is on the couch with you? Who else are you doing it with?
Benicio Del Toro.
Awesome. Perfect.
Diane Lane.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
It's got a good... That's a good...
It's going to be
good,
fun.
Good couch there.
That is a really good couch.
Those are all heavy hitters.
Heavy hitters. I'm just in there as to sort of back them up.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Do you know them at all? Have you worked with them before?
I've met both of them. I worked with Benicio on a Terrence Malick movie. And yeah, great guy. I mean, I've been a huge fan of his for ages. So it was special to sort of get to do a couple of days' work. And we were improvising, so it was a lot of fun.
Do you have like an? Did you study improv when you were growing up?
I studied. Yes, I'm classically trained.
Classically trained improviser.
Don't you know? We did a bit of improvisation. I remember actually one time I joined this theater improv group in London, and we put on this improv thing. Where basically you had your character, you know, they give you the character and then everybody else had a character, but you didn't know what they were. And then on the night you'd say, okay, listen, this is the deal. You were together with this girl 15 years ago. You abandoned her in a desert.
Very specific.
Yeah. I was like, okay, which desert? Okay, I got to go away and prepare this. And then, you know, I remember I wanted to vomit. I was so nervous going on because you're really dependent on your partners. You
right.
know? Because it can just turn into a shouting fest and, you know, just hitting a fucking dead wall. You really need somebody to be receptive and to sort of work well with you on it. Otherwise, I mean, you do it all the time. He's master of it, so you can probably tell us more. But it's otherwise, it just ends up
being a mess, you know.
All it takes is one person to try to hog the scene, and yeah. it's just... And
then
it's
no, that's fine, actually. One person hogged the scene, then the other person takes, you know, the low road. it's just as long as one is balancing the other, you know. It's right. fine if one hogs the scene. It's good, actually. Somebody's in charge, and the other person, you know, goes subservient or whatever. You can flip that later down the line in the scene, you know.
I hate it when it's like you're doing that in, like, a movie, and then you can tell, like, oh, this person prepared this. This isn't even a fucking improv.
Right.
This is just someone, like, like testing something out that they...
about 50 optional improv things.
Oh, I'm just going to improvise.
The bus stop improv. Yeah,
at
let's
the notes.
See.
At yeah.
Page 24, bus stop improv.
Well, I feel like it's so I feel like it's almost expected now for people to, especially when you're doing comedy, like, oh, maybe the end credits will be all of the funny improv outtakes that we didn't get to use in the movie.
But you guys are so fast. I mean, that's the... The terrifying
but,
thing.
But it even like even just doing it, I feel like I started all the directors. I feel like a lot of the comedies, they were also – they're all choosing the same exact way to cover it. So I think if you have any common sense, you can watch these movies and it starts to become pretty clear when people are going on runs, which I feel like takes me out of the movie now. Like
right.
I like the improv when it feels like, oh, it's just slipped in. And
that's
like,
right.
You don't know if it was written or not.
It's just slipped
in. Yeah. But now it's like you're like, oh, here comes the part where one person's talking and everyone else is just looking at them weird and it's going on for 5 minutes.
Right.
Like, oh, this was a run that they didn't, they didn't edit out.
They couldn't part with.
Yeah. On Vice Principals, Jody and I were basically on that, just like, let's not improv in it. Like, let's just like
stick
get
to the
scripts
that's right.
and get them good and just not like mess around that much. Like if we can, we will. But on Eastbound, we would like do one take of what we wrote and then just
wow.
spend hours just like going down these long roads. Just like where you're by the – and it would take forever to edit the show because you'd be like, well, fuck, this scene could literally go like 30 different ways. And you don't – you start to become odd to even know what to choose. You're like, I don't have no idea what we were going for or what we should
oh,
stick
yeah, that's
with.
Tough, especially on a series because – everything you say immediately becomes canon to the story.
Yes.
So if you start going down weird, if you start like elevating and then later on you're like, oh yeah, that's right. We already said that thing.
Yeah.
So we've committed to this thing.
Yeah, yes.
Fuck, we didn't need to do that.
I know. It is. There's like a balancing act, I think, with it. I think
restrictions are great, aren't they?
They are.
I think within restrictions you have great freedom.
Yep.
You know, it's like you're not allowed to move beyond this table. You know, something simple like that. Or your character... one of his legs doesn't work, you know, or so, you know, whatever it is. It's like that you have boundaries to work within, and then it's much easier. Whereas if the options, as you say, are you know infinite, then where do you go with it, and you know how do you go about editing it later?
So would you rather have a director say to you, "Here's what I want," or if has someone come to you and go, "No, just do whatever you want"?
The ideal thing is to have a really good script and you know and then like you know like Danny said I mean that's everything you know the script is everything from there you start to work and if you've got a really good script then you're in a strong place to muck around and do you know off the cuff sort of moments within a scene or you know actually one director I always remembered it and I would use it if I ever directed myself Andrea Arnold she would do like a take like so we would do the scripted take. Then we do an improvised take. And that works really well, I find, with kids. You know, when you're acting with kids, and sometimes when they have to learn a very, you know, it's like this is the regimented dialogue, you can see that kind of, sometimes they freeze. And the young actress, Tyler, on this, she was so good improv-wise. You know, it was hard to keep up with her. But when she was scripted, she would sometimes be very contained and sort of stiff. So it was interesting to see playing with it on that level. And also she would do, which I thought was really cool, then she would just do a silent take. So you would do all the intentions
oh,
physically
wow. oh, yeah.
and go through the scene. You just wouldn't do any of the dialogue. And I always thought that was a really smart thing to do because it just gives you so many options later in the edit.
Oh, so she's just taking bits and pieces from each one of
those. Or she just does the whole, you know, takes the whole scene as a silent scene, as an option. Or she takes moments from that scene that were silent, you know, and mixes in, you know, with the real script or the improvised version.
Yeah, I guess if you're not being an actor, I'm taking a guess. But I guess if you're an actor, if you rely too much on the words, then you probably get caught up?
Well, for me, that's why I'm really slow at learning my lines. It's a nightmare. You know, some friends of mine, they just look at it once and they're good to go. You know? Seth is like that. Seth Rogen. I don't know. Are you
that's how I do it, too. I just kind of can memorize very quick.
Hard for me, but not for you.
That's the only thing.
But everything else.
So I'll learn them, you know, to a point where they're rotten. You know, by the time I get to the, you know, the days of shooting it, you know, I've done it so much that, you know, I'm not even thinking about that. So I can sort of, you know, have fun and enjoy the other stuff.
Yeah, well, Danny and I were trying to figure out if you had a weakness, what it would be. And now we know it's just that it takes you 20% longer to learn a thing. But that's really about
it. At least 20%.
At least 20% longer.
That is also, my only weakness. Everything else, impervious.
Also, the entire Steve Jobs movie improvised, start to finish.
Yeah, which was tricky, you know, to keep that rhythm up. You know, that's the thing. You know, improvising an Aaron Sorkin script, no. Improvising Quentin Tarantino, no.
No, maybe not.
Except Quentin said, the one person that can improvise my dialogue, Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, of course.
And it's true. I came and sort of visited a set, and they were doing a scene, and I could just hear Samuel L. Jackson. It was kind of like, you know, Shakespeare. Just the sort of, you know, his rhythms and, you know, the words that he was hitting stresses on. And,
oh, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's so cool.
So cool.
And it is really interesting to see guys who it wasn't really until they were, like, in their 40s when they started locking in and figuring it out, because it is – it's a relatively unrewarding process.
Or they had it figured out, but nobody discovered them.
Right.
You know, they had it figured out for a long time. It's just it took a while to sort of, you know, become noticed, you know.
Did you figure it out? Did you know pretty quickly?
Oh, I figured it out from birth. for me, I kind of, you know – It was interesting because I came out of drama school, classically trained.
Of course. Another string.
I didn't finish, though. There's a weakness. I do have a recurring dream about finishing that drama school.
No, but you didn't finish, and so then your career exploded. You actually made the right choice.
Explosion. I left 6 months before the finish. Then I got a theater job, and then I didn't work for about 6 months after that. And then I got Band of Brothers. And I was like, okay, this is it. I'm off. You know?
Here we go.
I was like, that was easy. And then I didn't work really that much for the next, you know, 5 years or so.
Really?
Yeah, very sporadically. So, all the Band of Brothers money was gone.
It didn't last the 5 years?
Yeah, it didn't last the 5 years. Couldn't stretch it.
All right, Spielberg, I'll do your war movie, but I want 100 mil. You hear me? 100 mil.
It's going to cost you, see? No, you just look.
You better pay up, Spielberg.
Why, you, I ought to. It was...
Fork up some of that dinosaur money.
I kind of did sort of odd jobs and stuff like that, and so... When I got an opportunity, you know, around sort of 27, 28, I was just very sort of, you know, focused in terms of an opportunity came my way. I wasn't going to let it, pass me by.
Yeah. I mean, focus is a great way to describe when I see you on screen. I just go, God, he's just so fucking in the scene. He's so just flawless. It's the focus. It's the eyes. He doesn't blink. He may not be human.
It's the non-blinking, and you got my secret. I was like, just don't blink. I learned that from the guy that played Jesus Christ. What was that film or whatever? He said, I'm just not going to blink as Jesus. And I was like, so simple.
Yeah, because Jesus' eyes probably stay pretty moist. He probably doesn't need to. He doesn't need
to. He's got the Holy Spirit. He's always moist. He's moist with the power of God. Ooh. Is what it is. Hey, Deb.
Blinking.
Can you go in there, just go through that door, and then on the other side of the bathroom wall is the thermostat, and you can just flick the air on.
Oh, put the heat on. Let's get
it. You turn the heat up?
Turn it up.
I just want to see what happens when three dudes just start sweating out of their clothes and slowly start just to...
Hey, guys, it's a little warm in here.
You guys, you guys feeling that? Hey.
I feel kind of lightheaded.
Hey, Danny, put your balls on the table.
Yeah, they're pretty sweaty. I don't know if
really sweaty. Sliding right off.
That's funny, actually. I was talk about a funny story. Actually, this prop master. I was on another job, a television job. I think it was Poirot.
He's like an inspector or something.
He's like
inspector.
French Poirot, Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, French likes the sweet things.
He's got the mustache.
And the prop master came over to me, and he was like, He said, "Look at this." He was like, "I just found this bird. This baby bird fell out of the a nest in a tree."
Here we go.
And I was like, "Oh my god!" I was like, "Look at that!" And what he had taken was he'd taken his scrotum sack and sort of taken it out of his zipper and bunched it up in his hand.
That is a classic. Yeah.
It was the first time I'd seen it. Obviously, you guys have seen this before.
Well,
but I was thinking you could add the sound effect to it.
As a bird egg is good. I've seen it I have a tumor. Look at this.
The American variation of
stroke
it.
It.
Oh, I sat in gum and it's just like squishy ball skin. Mm. Apologies.
Gum does not look like testicles.
Chewed gum sack. Looks exactly like
testicles. Whereas a little bird does.
Looks just like a testicle. They get that all the time.
It looks like, scrotum skin.
And, of course, in today's day and age, I feel like someone would be instantly fired for sexually harassing other people.
You can't pull the bird joke anymore.
I got him fired.
Good for you.
I was like, that's disgusting.
But that was only so you could steal the joke and do it to other people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's right.
There's your alien story. One time Ridley came into work and he said, look, I caught a bird.
Yeah. That's right.
And
look at this alien egg. Look at this little xenomorph.
Look at this face hugger. Little face hugger right here.
Baby xenomorph. What do you think? I'm thinking about putting it in the scene.
That's what he was dropping in the cement at the Chinese theater.
Yeah.
He was
just, he's going to have two hands and a nut is what he's doing.
Just one nut?
Walk of Fame. Yeah,
just
one.
Just one nut. One. Yeah. That seems strange. Yeah. I favor the right.
It's stuck.
Danny said you were racing Ferraris on a...
last weekend.
Yes.
At Laguna Seca. Fantastic track. And Ferrari Challenge, which sort of been running since 1992, basically sort of set up for clients of Ferrari to sort of go racing.
Nice.
It was incredible. It was a real childhood dream of mine. So
that's
cool.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
What did you drive?
It's the 488 Challenge. So it's the 488 streetcar, but it's a challenge version, a sports version of that, track version rather.
Is there? Were you a race car driver in a previous existence?
I believe so. No, I just always loved, go-karts and anything with the steering wheel, so I couldn't wait to grow up so I could get my provisional license at 17 in Ireland. And my dad sort of let me drive the car when I was 12, sort of on the sort of little private road where I grew up. So I've just always loved it. And Ferrari reached out a couple of years ago and said, are you interested in joining this challenge series?
So badass.
God damn it.
They haven't called me.
What the fuck? Hey, Danny, this is Chuck Ferrari.
We'd like you to drive the Kia Soul this weekend in a race in Van Nuys.
Would you mind driving Michael Fassbender?
That sounds like fun, actually.
Would you mind driving Michael Fassbender to the track? Can you pick him up?
I'm there.
Not too early. Not too early. Let him sleep in a little bit.
Do you like cars, though? Are you?
I do. I haven't had any desire to race him, but it sounds like it would be awesome.
Mm. It's a very intense experience. That first time where you're actually in a race, and you do the free practice, which is you go around the lap, you try and sort of find the right lines and sort of get your times down. But then when you're surrounded and there's 20 cars in the track, it's quite an experience.
Is there anything about it where you feel like, oh, this could be the last thing that I ever do?
No, I didn't feel like that at all. But crashing into somebody is, that's a very strong possibility. There are incidents, usually in the first lap and usually in the first two corners. So just trying to, not crash into other people, basically.
Do you have to have a special kind of insurance to race, or is it just like the race's insurance?
I think you just sign away your life.
You're like, it's all good. Progressive
pretty much
covers
like,
you.
Yeah, nobody's responsible except myself.
Michael Fassbender crashes car, does 12 movies in 2018 that have nothing to do with anything. Yeah, that's how it is. But I feel like they know, that I think you're right. I think that must be insured by the concept of whatever it is they're doing. But I would be nervous if everyone else are not professional drivers and it's just like, oh, these are just all dudes who own them.
That's right.
That would make me nervous. I'd feel okay if everyone else was a professional driver, but not just a bunch of palookas out there like, oh, this isn't fucking hard.
Yeah, but everyone's really passionate, there. I got to say, all the drivers and, they're not professionals, but they take it pretty seriously. And obviously they don't want to crash either.
Right.
Because it could take them out of the next race if they can't get the car repaired in time or, certainly take them out for that race weekend. So But you have to keep your, you know, your wits about you for sure.
It's, I feel like it'd be tough to go back to just driving at a normal speed after you know what it's like to open it up like that, and then you just start cruising in a neighborhood at 25 miles per hour. Feels like it wouldn't be as fun anymore.
Yeah, directly getting into a car directly afterwards is a little dangerous. Yeah.
Stopping at a light.
Or not.
What is this shit?
No, I don't get an erection driving anymore. This is no fun. What happened? I don't know. It is. It, I mean, I don't know. I don't know much about cars. I just know that I like ones that look pretty. Yeah. But that I think would be super, super, super fun.
You like the speed, though, right? Obviously, that's why you bought.
Yeah, but you can't really. You can't drive very fast in Los Angeles anywhere because it's just all. It's just a mosaic of traffic.
Not at 5:30 in the morning.
even so, like you think that, but then you get on the freeway and you're like, ah, they're fucking doing construction now in the middle of the night, you know, because of this mythical subway that's going to connect the entire city.
But actually, you could take your car to a track. And, you know, take it out there and give it a go. And
I would drive it right into a wall. It's just not.
Instantly.
Instantly. It'd be, I mean, I was like, my wife would be like, all right, babe, I'll see you in a sec. Woo, crash. Yeah, someone rescue me. You know, like, I just feel, anytime I try to pull off anything that's even remotely cool or dexterous in any way, it's just not, it's instant fail. You must have just some sort of an innate, don't know what it is.
That happens to me, too. So trust me, like, you know, I've been surfing the last sort of 5 years, and it's just I make a fool of myself every time I go out there. It's very humbling. Don't laugh.
No,
it's a very humbling sport.
I bet you look like an elegant seal, just
an injured seal,
flipping and flopping through the waves.
An injured one.
Are you ever concerned that any of your physical activities? It sounds like you don't really worry about it. Because, you know, if you get injured, obviously, it's very hard to work.
You know, the thing is, I've been working like crazy for the last 10 years, and I haven't really, you know, I've just done sort of, you know, a lot of sort of jobs back to back. So now, this year, I'm just doing stuff that, you know, I want to do outside of that. And yes, you know, you definitely, you know, you can get hurt in, I suppose, either of those things, but, you know, I mean, it's fun.
What makes you so comfortable? Danny and I are trying to figure out how to siphon your comfort and confidence level in life.
Trust me, I'm not, you know, in all of these things, I'm definitely sitting there going, oh, shit. You know, especially if I, like, you know, if I'm paddling out and it's sort of, you know, high, you know, the waves are bigger than what I'm sort of, you know, comfortable with. That's scary. Or in that car as well, you know, definitely. You know, breathing and stuff and just trying to sort of...
See, maybe we just need to try more things. You see, I would go down to the beach to surf and I would get there and if the waves were big, I'd just be like, you know, maybe I just wanted to come here and walk in the surf.
Flop around where the water just gets... I don't feel like getting wet today.
You know, I'm going to get into boogie boarding today. I really feel like that's what it's all about, boogie boarding.
Yeah, boogie boarding's good. In a wave pool.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just going to go to a water park. I need to go to the beach.
I feel like I'm approaching these things pretty conservatively, to be honest. Like, I see some guys that would be raging on waves and just have that no fear. That's not me, for sure not.
That's called, like, being in your 20s.
Yeah.
Where you just, you know, it doesn't matter. It's like, oh, I got all the time in the world.
Some
big wave riders, you know, 50, you know.
Larry yeah, Hamilton, but they, you know, but like, they started, you know, they started when they were young. It's like,
yeah.
I feel like... In your 40s is a rough time to be like, yeah, I'm gonna start tackling the waves now. Never done it before, but it'll probably
be
fine.
That is the problem. I started 5 years ago, you know, mid-30s.
Right.
A bit late.
Right.
So I'll always look like, you know, a guy that started at 35.
You just turned 40.
I just turned 40.
Yay! Oh, nice. It's nice.
When did you turn 40?
April 2nd. Oh,
I turned 40 in December of last year.
Oh, very nice.
That's great.
Yeah, we're here.
Ah, we made it. Feels good.
There's no more lying to yourself. There's no
just acceptance.
40.
It's all about acceptance.
Go on in my life. Like, now it's time to sing that in the mirror. Yeah. Yeah, someone told me that, like, at 40, you feel better than you've ever felt in your life. And at 50, it's just shit. And I'm like, oh, man, why'd you say the second part?
Yeah, so you just got 10 years.
Yeah, just, well, 5 now.
It felt like shit when I turned 40. I've never get bummed out about birthdays, but after 40, it was just like, ugh, this kind of feels gross for about 2 months. It was weird. I didn't like it.
No.
I didn't mind it.
I didn't like it. Plus, you had the post-Christmas blues. You know?
I did. It was all. It's shitty weather.
Didn't get what I wanted.
You're old. Yeah. I'm just like, I think my tits are getting bigger. This is weird.
Guess I better just sit here and lick them while I'm on my back.
The tits of a 40-year-old. This is gross.
Oh, God, why do I have these? Oh, fuck. Oh. Yeah, I don't know. It just sort of seems like you're more comfortable and you're more... 38 was when I freaked out. And then after that, I was like, yeah, it's fine. You know, it doesn't really matter. Doesn't really matter. I think it helps to have a lot older friends, too.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, they seem
you still
okay.
feel young.
They're decomposing first.
They're the canary in the coal mine. Yeah. You're just like, well, we'll worry when something happens to them. Then we know it's real.
How many heart attacks? Oh, shit. I guess I'm next. All right. Fuck it. Who cares? Are you already working on something else, or are you taking a break?
Yeah, I've done nothing all year. It's been great.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Are you good with free time?
Absolutely.
That's great.
Mm.
Not everyone is.
Well, I guess, you know, you guys work really hard over here in the States. You don't have many holidays at all. And so, you know, I guess, you know, it takes for sure. It's not an immediate, you know, position where I'd be like, okay, cool, I'm on holiday, I can relax. Usually, you know, it takes maybe a week or two to sort of actually decompress and get into sort of not doing anything.
Right.
But then, you know, most people here are back to work again. How many weeks off do you get in the States?
I think everything's different. But I think just for what we do, it's just terrifying to stop because it's so hard to create momentum. And once you do, you're just like, oh, if I take a week off, it's all going to fall apart. This is all going to be gone. You know, like, so it, you know, which is not the truth, but it's still, it just feels like it's just so hard to get things going that it just feels wrong to stop.
Well, and like in this town especially, anytime you drive around, I mean, it's like there's constant billboards. Everything's just reminding you about all the stuff other people are doing.
Right.
It's like, oh, man, they're making a lot of stuff. Look at all these new movies. Look at all these new shows. Then you don't live here and you don't see those billboards. And you're just like, maybe they're not doing anything. Maybe everyone's taking my pace. It's like,
is that why you're moving back east?
Yeah, so I don't have to look at billboards of Netflix shows.
Had to escape the billboards, man.
I'm sick of seeing all these goddamn Amazon Prime shows.
Fuck it. God damn it. Where are they? How are they making everything?
YouTube Red? What the fuck is this?
What is this? There's too many platforms. There's just too many platforms. What do you want to do still? What do you want to do that you haven't done yet?
Surf and race.
Well, you're working up to it.
I'd like to direct, I got to say. At one point, I'd like to try that for sure.
What type of movie do you want to direct?
Something small.
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't really know what, or I don't have anything particular in mind. But yeah, that's something I definitely want to do.
Are you directing your Halloween movie?
I'm not. David Green is going to direct it. I'm not going to even be in it. I'm just gonna write it and produce it.
You're not even going to be in it?
No, I'm just going to write it. Yeah.
No, you got to be in the Michael Myers mask at the end, be like, "Hey, it's me," and then just goes.
That's
on
what I keep. I don't know how people get my email address, but they do, and I get emails every day from random people across the country that just send pictures of themselves in the Michael Myers mask, saying, "Are you casting for the movie yet? Here's me," and it's just like some fat guy in the forest behind his house with a mask that someone has taken photos of him. It's like the weirdest kind of headshots. You're like, all right, okay, yeah, he's got a great body. He looks good.
Now, Michael, let's take a picture in a mask and email it to you and go, hey, what do you think?
Yeah, I sent mine in.
Michael Myers?
This is pretty scary.
So how did they find you?
I have no clue.
Danny McBride at me.com.
Yeah, it's impossible. Why would they email to crack?
How would they? Yeah. Or Gmail or Yahoo.
In plain sight.
Or right there.
There's just a few combinations and then you find me. Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
Danny McBride 2. Oh, it's not clever enough. Not clever enough. Do you? It's this type of movie. This movie that you want to direct. Is it dramatic? Is it funny?
Hopefully all of those things. I don't know. I just like to sort of spend some time, you know, behind the camera and doing that side of things.
You wouldn't want to be in it, though.
I wouldn't want to be in it, but sometimes, you know, to get it made, I might have to be.
Sure.
Or if it works out that way, I'm, you know, definitely not adverse to it. I just want to get the opportunity to try doing that.
Do you ever feel oppressed by the amount of choices that I assume that you have? I mean, it's like if someone goes, hey, you can do anything, you know, there's all these different types of movies you could do. How do you know which one to do?
I don't, you know, and it's hit and miss. You know, I just sort of read something and respond to it. And then, you know, I'll talk to sort of, you know, the both my agents, you know, one in the UK and one here, and we'll sort of discuss it, and then I'll go away and think about it and just make a decision. But, you know, it's not, you know, it's an incredible position to be in, honestly. It's such a lottery, you know, to sort of be in this position, to be here now in this place that I'm at. It's just a lottery. And to have the options is, you know, it's not something that I'll ever think, God, you know, this is, you know, oppressing me. It's just, I just really feel like, you know, when's it going to end? And no, you know, it's like, wow, I'm still here. I still haven't found me out. Holy shit.
Oh, shit.
I don't think I've met anyone who does this that doesn't think that. Like, everyone just thinks, like, when are they going to show me the door?
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, yeah, because it's – for when you haven't really gotten to work yet, it's very hard to even conceptualize what that would be like for someone to go, you, I want you, get up here, you know? Yeah. And then a lot of time – and the reason I use the word oppressive is because I think people get so in their heads about stuff. Mm. And you can get super fucked up if you're worried about when are they going to find out? Oh, when are they going to – because you're just not enjoying any of the stuff when it's happening.
Yeah, that's torture. I think, you know, just the thing is to – not think too much. and basically just, you know, go for it. And you know, again, like not to be stifled by all that sort of outside pressure that you would add, you know, oh, is this going to be good? Is it, you know, what's the sort of going to happen next? I just, you know, take risks, try to learn, you know, and that's it. And if somebody pulls the plug, then I had a good run, you know. I had like really sort of proud and very happy that I got to work with the best people in the business, you know.
So I feel like your movie has to be called The Man in the Mirror.
Two.
You start with the second one, just like when things really start heating up.
Then you can go back and make the prequel.
Yeah,
just Man in the Mirror.
Yeah,
yeah. After that, that'd be fantastic. I mean, there must be things that you
Boy in the Mirror,
the Boy in the Mirror. Yeah, and then you grow up.
Yeah, Old Man in the Mirror, Dead Man in the Mirror.
But I mean, I feel like there must be things that you do where you feel like, oh, it'd be really fun to showcase that. I mean, do you ever choose roles based on it'd be great to try to exercise that particular muscle?
I suppose. I mean, what I would try and do is look at something. First of all, I don't intellectualize too much about it. I read something and it just sort of, like, it'll affect me, you know, I'll be sort of drawn to it or not. And then I'll be sort of, you know, who's directing it? And then it's like, have I done a character like this before? Or is there something new to, you know, to explore here? And then you get a script like Frank, you know, something film like that, where you're just like, this is bonkers and, you know, fantastic and just totally original and fresh and fun. And the idea of sort of, you know, wearing a mask through a movie, not dissimilar to Michael Myers.
You gotta give him that, Danny.
I have done mask work already, just so you know.
The entire time. You can move around. You can, you know.
You don't even have to turn up to work. That's the beauty of it. You know, you can just send in the double. It's like, it doesn't matter.
I'll be there late.
Yeah. Seriously, you could let someone else do it the entire time, or this is the end. You could lift it up, and then it could be him, and then put it back down, and no one would ever know the difference.
Or multiple times, the mask falls off, and it's always a different actor underneath there. It's like, wait, was that Michael Fassbender? No. Is that Danny?
Is that Tony Danza? Like, you just got to throw in a curveball. You just got to throw in a weird curveball every once in a while. Do you live in the States or do you live back at, do you live in London?
I live in London 20 years now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
The community there just feels like it's so, you know, America is so, I'm jealous of a culture that's such a close-knit culture. I just feel like in London would be such a great place to live. I mean, you can, you know, you talk to comedians, they basically just tour around and just keep doing the same cities over and over and over again in a landmass about the size of California.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, the States is pretty incredible in terms of diversity, you know, and just landscape and people as well.
So many different types of white people.
Yeah, I mean,
there's some, well, like, you know, some of us tan a little bit, and then some of us get like red and then just white.
No, but I mean, if you look at something like, you know, New Orleans,
right?
So different to here, to New York, San Francisco, you know, Austin is a very individualistic city. Yeah, I guess it's just what you're used to, isn't it? You know, for me, Europe's home. I just, you know, that's sort of, you know, the mentality and, you know, and just sort of the culture of it is where I feel, you know, best.
Yeah. You were born in Germany.
Yeah.
Which part?
I was born in Heidelberg. And then we moved to Ireland when I was two.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then so, because I, for the longest time, I didn't actually know what your actual accent speaking voice was.
Yeah. I know, it's weird, isn't it?
It's kind Mandarin.
It's a strange accent, yeah. I did spend some time in China, now that you mention it.
But I know you speak German.
Yeah, badly.
This is why Man in the Mirror 2 should be in German.
That's right.
You need to sing it in German.
Yeah.
What does Man in the Mirror in German sound
Falco
like?
Falco style. Remember Falco?
Of course I remember Falco.
Yeah. Der Kommissar.
Der Kommissar. Fantastic. But then he did an American version. They did an English version of it, too. You know, which wasn't as exciting.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Don't turn around.
But he didn't sing it, did he?
I believe he did.
Oh, no.
I think he did. And they were concurrent. They were both hits.
Alles klar, Herr Kommissar.
Alles klar, Herr Kommissar. What is Man in the Mirror in German? How does that sound?
What is Man in the Mirror? Jesus. Yeah, Mann in der Spiegel? No. Mensch in der Spiegel. I know grammatically that's wrong.
Somewhere like that. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Well, you'll learn when you shoot it.
I'll learn it.
Yeah, for sure, because that's exactly what's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
I feel like if we say it, someone will report it, and then it's automatically
and
already
then it's
true.
Fact. Exactly.
And then it's fact.
It's out there now.
It doesn't
it's
matter.
Real.
And then
it's real.
And then you have to do it.
Then
and your agent's going to call you and go, did you agree to do this?
I'll put it on my Christmas album, which will be coming out this year.
Which is going to be great for Danny, because he's going to be bummed around Christmas time.
It's going to be called Covered in Love.
41. God damn it.
And it'll be a selection of cover songs.
At least this Fassbender album's out.
I've already come up with the album cover. It's me in a tuxedo on a horse.
Love it.
Fantastic.
Yeah. No pants.
No pants at all.
No shoes, I was thinking.
No shoes. Okay. Yeah.
I mean that too.
No pants is better, you think?
Well, maybe no shoes. Maybe just leave them wanting more.
What about no pants but shoes?
Subtle.
No pants but shoes?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Butt shoes. What are butt shoes?
They keep your butt from getting muddy.
Okay, nice.
Yeah,
that's
so
smart.
If you have to walk through rocky terrain on your butt, it's sort of
cuz sometimes when you're going downhill, you do kind of
you do
slide.
a little bit
butt
of sliding.
A dog with worms.
Exactly. I feel like you have so many jumping off points for Corden. You know, like it's.
Yeah, I'm warming up here.
What other cover songs are on your cover album?
I was thinking Winds of Change.
Of course, yeah.
I would whistle really badly.
Yep. It's not bad at all.
It's moving, yeah.
I can already feel the Winds of Change coming in.
That's the AC, I think.
Down the line, down to Gorky Park.
That's two. Yeah.
That's two. What else could I put on there?
I mean, you got eight. Like a good any album really needs like eight songs. Mm. You don't have to fill all eight.
I don't know. Maybe some suggestions, perhaps.
God, what would be a good one, huh?
I don't know. Probably Uptown Funk, and then anything by. And probably the theme song to Keeping Up Appearances.
I could do With or Without You, You Too, but in opera style.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
Yes, you already got the accent for that one. Yeah. You totally could do that.
It's be genres for each of them.
And then anything by Gordon Lightfoot. Maybe The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald or...
Me and my wife always sing like Nine Inch Nails songs to each other, but in like a sweet voice. Just like, you know.
I want to fuck you like an animal.
You do that.
I like that.
I wear this crown of shit.
In nursery rhyme style.
That's how we put our babies to sleep.
This is the first day of the last day.
These are all good ideas. But I know they said you had a hard out at 2:45, so I don't want. And we only have that means we have 5 minutes left.
Oh shit!
Where do you say something else there?
Smash
you got a hard on at 4:45.
They said you got a hard on at 2:45. Where is it? Show me that bird. Show me that little injured bird. Oh, that bird looks like he's feeling a little better.
That's how you get him to come over. Yeah, it's real. It's here.
Yeah, that's when they're looking down to touch it. You can do it because they can't see you whistling at that point.
You hear it?
And then yeah.
Look closer.
Oh my god.
Now the best, I think the best reaction to that is just pretend like you think it's a bird the entire time.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Where did you find him? Until the guy realizes he's just an adult man with his balls in his hand.
Yeah.
And then he has to like...
And then shake their hands.
And hey, then well, shake their hands. Yeah. Yeah.
Or if they get upset about it, when they look up, you just slap them across the face. And just like, how dare you?
That's right. Confusion is the best option.
What just happened?
Confuse.
That's right.
If I want to take my balls out, I just take them out. I don't have to make a sketch out of it. I don't have to make a play. I don't have to make a weird ball play. I just take them out.
Oh, damn.
Perfect.
That's like the Billy Connolly sketch where you know he's caught like masturbating, and the first thing you're supposed to say when somebody catches you in a compromising position like that is like, "I'm glad you're here."
You invited this.
And then you have to tell them that a spider has fallen down your pants. And you're trying to shake it loose.
Is that part of the Connolly bit?
Yeah,
he's great. Do you see a lot of comedy? Do you like? It seems like you.
I do. You know, the last time I saw live comedy, I don't get to see that much. But I saw Dave Chappelle Montreal, which was incredible.
Oh, just for laughs? Or just for laughs?
Yeah,
yeah,
just for laughs. So that was pretty cool. He's amazing.
He's incredible.
He was a master.
How long did he do?
It seemed like he was improvising, actually. I mean, I don't know how much of that.
That's what you can't tell, is that he'll just light up a cigarette on stage.
That's right.
And someone will shout something. He'll just start talking.
Yeah.
Like, was this written? Is he just... Because everything just comes out so perfectly formed.
Yeah. And so
it's pretty brilliant, yeah.
Nonchalant.
Yeah.
It was excellent. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Almost upsetting to a, like, fuck.
Yeah.
Someone can do that? Why would anyone ever do it now? What's the point? There it is. Yeah. That's the perfect incarnation of that thing.
And we were talking about it yesterday, weren't we? Eddie Murphy, Delirious.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it the, that one's got the poop shark.
Goonie Goo Goo.
I think Goonie Goo Goo was...
Falling down the stairs.
I think Goonie Goo Goo, wasn't Goonie Goo Goo in Raw?
It's in Delirious. It's when he's like talking about the G.I. Joe underwater.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, right. No, I'm sorry. Okay, no. Umfufu is in Raw, where he marries.
You gotta get those words.
He's like,
right.
Oh, I just pulled your ass off
half.
A zebra.
Half. I want half.
Yes. I mean, that was an incredible time to go see like stand up in a movie theater. I remember seeing both of those like in a movie theater.
Yeah.
But it's just not, you know. Now you don't need to, unless you're Kevin Hart.
Yeah, then
I guess.
Do it.
But no one else.
Suits.
Yeah. Who else did you, if you liked Eddie Murphy, who else did you like?
Richard Pryor, I'd say would be absolute favorite. Bill Hicks.
Yep.
At the moment, Louis C.K.
Yep. Keep going, okay. Yep, cut to 3 hours later. Shecky! Green!
Keep going.
I feel like I want to see you do more comedies now. Because you're obviously... You're obviously funny, so why?
I don't know. Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to give it a go. But again, I guess I find it. It's such a hard genre. I mean, really, out of all the genres, it's kind of one of the hardest because a drama is a drama. You know, you can't question that. You're like, well, that wasn't a drama.
But I mean, it wasn't very dramatic, was it?
That's not drama.
How many people died?
That is not drama. I know drama. But like, you know, comedy, if people aren't laughing, it's not a comedy.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and I guess you get the same thing for a horror, a thriller, but it's...
Yes, the audience can turn on you in those genres, you know? Like, you can tell when you're in there, like, ooh, people are not liking this.
Yeah.
With the drama,
you've got an immediate measuring stick. Yeah. I mean, it's like... Well, they're either laughing or they're not.
Yeah, exactly. Because with a horror or a comedy, it's like the intention is very specific.
Yeah. Mm.
But drama can just be like, oh, nothing really happened, but we saw a slice of life of this, you know, boy growing up.
Maybe that's what they wanted me to think. Yeah.
It was just boyhood. I was just talking about boyhood.
Oh, yeah.
Just talking about boyhood. I don't have kids, so I didn't really get boyhood. And I ran into some friends. I mean, it was fine. I thought it was fine. But by the end, I was like, wow, it was just this guy growing up. And I came out and I ran into people I knew who have kids. And they were just sobbing. Oh, fuck. I was never... God damn it. That was exactly what it's like. I don't know. I don't have kids. I guess I didn't... I don't know. It just seemed like... Yeah. Hours of that. What about you? What are you going to do for Halloween? Anything you want to...
What am I going to dress up as for Halloween?
No, I mean, what are you going to do for the movie Halloween?
Do you dress up for Halloween?
You know, I do sometimes. I haven't done a good costume recently. I feel like I'm always, like, working or something, and you just kind of... The crew gets to dress up, and then you're just dressing up as a...
For a living.
For a living. I want to be myself for Halloween.
Halloween. This year for Halloween, I went in the movie Alien. Yeah. Yeah, we do. We do sometimes. Sometimes I do. Yeah. It just sort of depends. I mean, I always feel like my costume has to be funny in some way, which is stupid because no one cares. But, yeah. My favorite costume was Luke Skywalker, Texas Ranger.
That's so pretty good.
Like the hat and then the lightsaber on the holster and then the boots, but the robes.
I had like a go-to for a few years where it was between like a monkey mask and a tiger mask, and then you just wear a Hawaiian shirt and you just go as a party animal. That's like what is.
Nice.
That's it. And you just God alternate the heads out. Yeah.
God damn it.
Well, party animal.
It's like the Jim Belushi character in Trading Places.
Yeah. Hey, everybody, look what happened to me.
That's all exactly that guy. That's all you do all night long. Well, Alien comes out Friday. Alien Covenant comes out Friday, which is, what is the date?
What day is today? Thursday.
Today's Wednesday.
Today's Wednesday.
Yeah, the 17th.
So just stay alive for a few more days. And
that's all you got to do. It. Then nope. Saturday, yeah. Preach. Fucking cares.
Yeah, whatever.
Go see it again.
Yeah, go then, see it again.
And then fucking just give up after that.
Just like, let it go.
It's all over. But it was really great chatting with you. Thank you so much for coming and sitting down, man. It was a pleasure. You equally as nice the second time I met you, Danny McBride. I was saying, is there anything you want to talk, anything you want to say about the Halloween movie that you're writing?
Just that I hope we don't fuck it up. That's the main thing. I hope
that
I
is
hope
the mantra, it. Isn't it? That
that's
is the
what
mantra.
We're working very hard not to do. Yeah, so we'll see. Yeah, we're just stripping it down and trying to not make him, you know, Michael Myers Frankenstein, which is, I think is like what happened in like the later sequels of it. He just became where he was like indestructible.
Right.
And he's not scary anymore. So we're trying to make him real.
I think you mean like Frankenstein's monster? Nice try.
Frankenstein had a monster?
Yeah, nice try. 1% Rotten Tomatoes already. You said Frankenstein, not Frankenstein's monster. You make him like Frankenstein. He's just this mad scientist.
Yeah, we don't want to make him like a scientist. We're trying not to do that. That's been something that's
that
really bothered
thing
people. Yeah.
Of making Michael Myers like a scientist. You just want to make him like an indestructible beast.
With a Bunsen burner.
Yeah.
Doing a say. He's just trying to get those kids to shut up so he can finish his experiments.
Yeah.
One night a year. You guys are so fucking loud. Yeah. Knocking on doors. I'm doing physics. Just, you can use
magnets
that.
Magnets here.
If you want to use that. Fucking magnets. How do they work? Thank you. So thanks for getting that. Appreciate that. Yeah, Alien Covenant, May 19th, Friday. Go see it. Danny McBride, Michael Fassbender. I imagine that's the way it has to be said, right?
Absolutely.
Michael Fassbender.
Louder. Mm.
Louder.
Yeah.
Louder. Yeah. Louder. More intense. Louder.
Yeah. Fassbender.
That's better.
Yeah.
I put the emphasis on the second one instead of the... Well, I mean, I'd imagine Americans are like, Fassbender.
That works too.
And you're okay with either one?
Totally.
All right, fine.
Yeah.
Look for Covered in My Love.
Covered in Love.
Covered in Love. The
it's Christmas.
The Christmas album of covers by Michael Fassbender.
Yeah. Any decent outlet should have that.
Any of your K-Tel Records or your
Columbia House Music, Columbia House BMG Music,
Blockbuster, Target will have it everywhere.
Target will have it, Walmart, and the Flying J truck stop.
Yep.
Thanks for being here, everyone. Enjoy your burrito. The end.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.